Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Carmanah Technologies Corporation Third Quarter 2016 Results Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listening mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question and answer session, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. Before beginning its formal remarks, Carmanah would like to remind listeners that certain portions of today's discussion may contain forward-looking statements that reflect views with respect to future events. Any such statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those projected in these forward-looking statements. For more information on the forward-looking statements and the company's risks and uncertainties relating to such forward-looking statements, please read Carmanah's annual report as filed with SEDAR, which also is posted on their website, www.carmanah.com. All currency amounts are expressed in US dollars, with the exception of the company's TSX-listed share price, which is quoted in Canadian dollars. The company's financial statements are prepared in accordance with IFRS, or International Financial Reporting Standards. During this call, the company may also refer to adjusted EBITDA, a non-IFRS financial measure, which is calculated as earnings before interest, income taxes, amortization, stock-based compensation, and various one-time charges, which are detailed in their publicly filed management discussion and analysis. Carmanah uses this metric internally, in addition to others, to make strategic decisions and evaluate their performance. If anyone has difficulties hearing the conference, please press star zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Thursday, November 10th, 2016, at 6:00 A.M. Pacific Time and 9:00 A.M. Eastern Time. I would now like to turn the conference call over to Mr. John Simmons, Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead, sir.
Good morning. As the operator said, I'm John Simmons, and I'm joined on this call by Evan Brown, our Chief Financial Officer. On October 12th, we released preliminary and selected financial information for our third quarter. Last night, after the close of market, we released our full third quarter results, which are now on SEDAR. As is our practice in these calls, Evan and I'll make a few opening comments and then open the floor for questions from the analysts and shareholders. So let's start with the financial review of the quarter. Evan?
Thank you, John. On October 11th, 2016, we announced our intention to divest our power business segment. As required under IFRS 5, the operations of this segment have now been classified as discontinued operations for the three and nine months ended September 30th, 2016, and associated comparative periods. As we move forward, we will be reporting only the continuing operations. Revenues for the third quarter were $1.3 million. $11.3 million, down $1.1 million, or 9%, for the same period in 2015. This decrease was the result of reduced revenues from the company's marine businesses, which were down approximately 32% over prior year. Offsetting this increase in the company's other signal businesses, which were up approximately 9% over 2015. Our illumination segment revenue was $1.3 million, up from $1 million from the third quarter in 2015. Gross margin during the third quarter was 45.3%, up from 40.5% in the same period in 2015. On a year-to-date basis, gross margin was 43.4%, up from 41.1%. Both our signals and illumination segments contributed to this increase. Our signal segment was up due to a product mix shift closer to the or with higher margin products, while the illumination increase was due to the abnormally low margins in Q3 2015, resulting from a combination of low revenue coupled with fixed warehousing costs. Operating expenses for the fourth quarter were $4.3 million, down $1 million, or 19%, in the same period in 2015. This was largely due to the initial amortization associated with the acquisition of intangible assets acquired as part of the acquisition of SABIC. Excluding unusual items, operating expenses were down $200,000 over the same period in 2015. Net income for the third quarter was $1.1 million, up from a loss of $700,000 in the same period of 2015. The comparative 2015 loss was attributable to amortization, also resulting from the acquisition of SAVIC. Adjusted EBITDA for the third quarter was $1.7 million, or 15% of revenue, up 48% from $1.1 million in the same period of 2015. Finally, as of September 30th, 2016, our cash balance was $21 million U.S. dollars, up $6 million from the beginning of 2016, primarily driven by cash provided by operations. I'll leave it at that, and back to you, John.
Thanks, Evan. Before we open for questions, I have just a couple of comments. There were a few significant and positive events occurring in Q3 that I'll speak to in a minute. But first, I'd like to make some comments about our Q3 revenues, which are down on a comparative basis. While we don't publish budgets, I'll comment that our overall Q3 numbers were less than budget, which is the first time that our overall numbers have been below this threshold in 3 years. And when I say that our overall numbers declined, this is not to say that we've never had a vertical that fails to meet a quarterly target, nor is it that in Q3 we failed to surpass budget thresholds in all verticals. In fact, every quarter over the past few years has been comprised of some hits and misses, with the hits typically outweighing the misses. In Q3, for the first time, the misses outweighed the hits. You know, at a fundamental level, all of Carmana's verticals are project businesses. In project businesses, there is limited run rate. We quote and bid. Mostly we win, but sometimes we lose, and the timing of execution is almost always outside of our control. Sometimes business comes in more quickly than we expect, and sometimes we have inexplicable delays. My point here is that no one should be surprised if there is a quarterly falter. To be clear, we don't like it, but sometimes we have limited ability to affect revenue in the short term. In operating this business, our managers focus mostly on process. Do we have good process? Are we properly resourced? Are people engaged? Our thesis is this: if our process is good and we're working hard, good things will happen. But this doesn't mean that there won't be ebbs and flow in the short term. So I don't want anybody to be surprised by our Q3 results. As I've been saying in these calls over the past 2 years, we remain focused on the horizon and not the tips of our toes. We're making efforts to build long-term value, and from time to time, there will be short-term falters. So I'm neither making excuses, nor am I pleased with our Q3 results. But what I am very pleased with is our progress as a company. We have a solid vision, sound strategy, a wonderful group of dedicated staff, who are all working diligently and executing well. Separate from our financial results, we made some important development headway in Q3 when we signed a strategic agreement with low Earth orbiting satellite operator Globalstar. The agreement is a tangible step forward in our innovation strategy, which will see all Carmana products connected by satellite in under 3 years. This connectivity will empower new business models and allow Carmana to lead the way in providing our customers new levels of service. At the same time, our agreement with Globalstar, which has us building a new state-of-the-art solar-powered asset tracking beacon for them, has spawned a new signals operating unit. Our new telematics vertical launched in this quarter. This unit will seek to utilize Carmana's core competency, our ability to design and build rugged, reliable solar-powered devices that operate with minimal energy budgets. And we are going to be seeking new customers to help them with their Internet of Things growth applications. We have one customer now, but we hope to add many more to our ranks. And finally, before opening for questions, I want to remind you that 3 months ago, we foreshadowed our intention to increase innovation spending starting in Q3 and continuing through the balance of 2016 and in fact, through 2017. Our increased spending will be focused on enabling our own product portfolio with satellite-connected telematics so that we can pursue new business models and provide greater service to our customers. We'll also be advancing spending on internal systems designed to improve the overall experience of customers and last-mile partners. We think the systems work is necessary if we're going to be able to scale our business and achieve operating leverage. All of this is consistent with our aim to build the longer-term value of our business. So I think I'll leave it at that. Operator, please cue for questions.
And thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. And if you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. So once again, if you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. And we have our first question from Deepak Kaushal. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Thanks for taking my questions.
Good morning.
How are you guys doing?
Great.
Good.
I did have a question. I'll start, I guess, on the revenue side. John, thank you for the comments on the overall state of the business. I'm just wondering what you're seeing in the broader, within the lumpiness. I mean, is there anything going on here that's customer specific, or are you seeing a broader change in certain areas of the world, versus perhaps 6 months ago, that change how you look towards next year in terms of budgeting costs?
No, I mean not really. Evan mentioned when he was doing a financial review that the big miss for us, which goes back to one of our first and most traditional businesses, was a miss in the marine side. I think it's a temporary anomaly. There were two specific circumstances that we can point to with our two largest customers that we have typically under long-term procurement contracts. And for a couple of unrelated reasons in different parts of the world, there was not much of an order flow in that quarter. And I think that, that has almost nothing to do with nothing, if I can put it that way. So there's no change in the environment that I would say we need to reorder the world here, or our expectations are going to be either higher or lower as a result of it. I will tell you that in our offshore wind business, and this is nothing new to us, and I think we've spoken about it before, these are long-term development projects. This is going to be a high-growth industry sort of over time, but because these projects are so long in the making, it's easy for us to see what the size of our market will be quite far in advance. So our ability here, we probably have more visibility here than in any other business. And I'm only bringing this up because even before we acquired the business we now call Sabic Offshore, which deals with wind farm marketing and safety solutions, we knew that there would be a dip in spending in 2017. So that was baked in at that time, and nothing that will happen in the short term will change that. 2018, 19, and 20 will resume rapid growth. So it's not like there will be no business in 2017, but the amount of capital spending overall on wind farms will decline in 2017, and of course we're a very small part of that capital spending, but we go on the roller coaster with it.
Great. That's very helpful. And then looking out in terms of your operating costs, you've done a good job giving us some insight into your plans for innovation spending. I'm looking on the sales and marketing side in particular, and how that might change, or how you might look at that investment as you prepare these new products for launch next year and more connectivity across your product portfolio.
Well, when you devise new devices, business models, or services, you need to tell people about it. And so there will be some associated bubble in spending. It goes hand in hand with the innovation spending, especially if the innovation spending around research and development or product development is successful. The next responsibility then is to, in a sense, preload somewhat sales and marketing expense to take that message to the world. And then the expectation, of course, is that all of that investment will be followed by a positive revenue response. So, you know, in your models, and I think that's the question you're asking yourself, Deepak, I would think that you would want to scale up your expectations about what we're going to spend on sales and marketing.
Okay, got it. Thank you. And then, I just had a minor question, my last one, on cash flow. Can you give us an insight? I know that the cash increased year to date for both the core business and the power business. Can you give us some sense of the relative cash flows for the quarter, for Q3 itself, and a sense of how much cash we can expect to squeeze out, you might expect to squeeze out of the power business on a quarterly business basis before it's sold?
So in the quarter, Deepak, cash mainly was generated from operations, which is the jump. The cash that comes in, although we are reporting with only continuing operations for the balance sheet and the income statement, that cash balance actually flows in from obviously both sources, even discontinued operations. And the cash flow for both the power businesses is a little bit different, but typically near the third and fourth quarter of the year in our on-grid business, we do begin seeing the cash collection cycle increase. So unlike prior quarters where we're ramping up for the year, in Q3 and Q4 we're actually collecting more of that outstanding receivables as projects come to completion.
Okay, so for Q3 in particular, I know that your filing, you've given a year-to-date number for the continuing operations. Are you able to give us a Q3 number for cash from ops, from continuing ops?
It would be the from discontinued ops. We would be able to.
No, from continuing ops. Sorry.
Oh, from continuing ops.
So you've done about your $1.7 million in EBITDA. How much of that did you convert to cash from ops in Q3?
Let me just look at that one for a second.
Yeah, you can circle back. That's fine. Okay, I can pass the line. That's all the questions for me.
Okay, thanks, Deepak.
And thank you. As a reminder, if you have a question, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. And our next question comes from Mac Whale. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. The gross margins looked really quite good in the quarter, and I'm wondering whether how you view, are you satisfied with these? Is there anything sort of one-time in nature, or do you think there's still room to go further?
No, I don't think there's a heck of a lot of room. I mean, we're very pleased with margins in that, between 40 and 45%. If any time we're in that range, I think that, and if we can attain those numbers and maintain those numbers, I think that's, that fits within our longer-term vision of this business model for the sale of products. So, yeah, I think, I think you're really getting at the heart of why we are narrowing our focus to these continuing operations and signals and illumination. And it's principally because of our ability to attain and maintain these high gross margins.
Okay. And so when you think of these new illumination products that are coming out, would we expect... do you expect to see strong margin right off the bat, or is there, what's the dynamic of introducing a new product? I'm trying to figure out whether you kind of go in with low volumes and high prices and therefore high margin, or what the strategy might be.
It's a great question, Mac, and I will tell you it's a little complex, but I'll try to give you at least the elements that we have to consider in this decision making. I think you've heard us over time say that solar outdoor lighting, streetlights, pathways, and parking lots will not be an everyday product in the world unless we can price these systems at or below parity with grid-tied lighting. So the customer feedback that we have is that there's a high degree of interest in solar, but don't expect us to pay more, essentially. And it's very interesting, and of course we've been riding cost curves on solar and LED efficiencies and battery efficiencies, but we've been riding those cost curves down as and we are now getting to the point where in some markets we are crossing that parity line. And by that statement, you should also take it that there are some markets where we're not, and this is where solar lighting is different than grid-tied lighting. Because while we can make a solar light that will work perfectly well in Alaska, the cost of that system, because of the size of the solar collectors and the amount of battery we have to put on, makes it cost prohibitive. Mm-hmm. And so our addressable markets initially will be in areas where there's large insolation rates, where we can size our systems small enough so that they cost a low enough number to meet or cross that parity line. So you can see the complications in the dynamics as we move our market, target market north, typically, then we will still have the ability to produce reliable systems, but they are going to be sized somewhat larger to deal with the redundancies required to maintain, required service levels and compete fairly with grid-tied lighting. So we could have a situation over time where effectively our margins in the sunniest places are higher than our margins in the less sunny places. And these will all be temporary and dynamic factors because the cost curves that we've been riding on to get us to this point are continuing to move in a favorable direction. So you and I have spoken about this in the past, but we currently sell a luminaire that generates 100 light at the rate of 100 lumens per watt. This year's iteration will be 150 lumens per watt. We expect next year to be over 200 lumens per watt. And all of these have impact on our overall system sizing and our ability to put in place a system with a bill of materials that allows us to sell at a price point. So I will tell you that margins are going to be a really interesting and dynamic element as we try to grow this business. If we focus solely on a small number of addressable markets in 2017, we should be able to attain pretty reasonable margins. If we expand the scope of the addressable market, the only way we'll be able to compete is if we lower our margins so that the same customer requirement is being met. So that customer in, I'll call it in the more northern parts of that addressable market, are still buying a product from us that competes favorably on price with grid-tied lighting. Mm-hmm. So do you get the dynamic of that?
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, that's a good position to be in, that you have enough margin and enough geographies in which you feel there's something to manage, right? Like, to be in a position, like if you were so far out of the, away from the parity in every market, there'd be nothing, right? I mean, you would just be saying, you know, it'd be like 5 years ago sort of thing. But what I understand is that you're close enough now where there's a bit of, I wouldn't call it a game, but there's decisions that you can make about how fast you penetrate, how much does it cost to penetrate certain markets, both in margin as well as, say, SG&A, to really sell something that sort of the value proposition is tougher on. So I guess what I'm hearing is that you're comfortable with where the capabilities, the market price and your cost of your bill of materials that you can, you know, you can penetrate some markets, and that that pace of penetration will be what we'll be watching, in effect.
And I will tell you, that we are actively trying to decide how big an addressable market we are going to, you know, how, what we're going to go after next year.
Right.
And so, and you can understand it. I mean, we could, take our time, if you like, and wait for the cost curves to get out in front of us so that we can attack these markets with good margins. Or if John Simmons with Elon Musk, we might price at very low margins and take a larger look at the market, establish the business, and have the cost curves deliver margins at a later date.
Right.
All valid strategies. We're trying to figure out which one's best for us, and that's an active consideration that we're going through right now.
Okay. And just lastly, to close the loop on those products, is the timeline still as you foresaw, like the products in customers' hands in early 2017, and then move from there?
Our plan is to be quoting our new product platform in Q1 and delivering at the end of Q1 and into Q2.
Okay. Okay. I think that might be it. And with just a sort of a more of a housekeeping, I'm not sure if I think you've sort of addressed this. With the products in marine that you saw these delays in, have you seen, you know, halfway through Q4, was it a situation where some of those have shipped, and so Q4 is shaping up to be sort of a bigger than a normal Q4, or should we really be thinking about a Q4 as a normal, and these things are sort of pushed out, the orders pushed out over a longer time frame?
The two separate circumstances that led to the decline that Evan talked about.
Mm-hmm.
One of them has to do with the retendering of a major contract with one, I would say, our second largest customer, which is a European authority. We won that tender, and it's been protested by a competitor. As a result, there is some adjudication going on as to whether the protest will be denied or upheld. If it's denied, we should get back on track with orders. If it's upheld, the authority may have to go through a retender process early in the year. So that's created an interruption in what would have been a normal flow of business. And this is a long-term customer relationship. And again, it was the rebid of a frame agreement that's a 5-year agreement, and we were the successful bidder. So hard to tell. You know, I will tell you these things are never over until they're over.
Mm-hmm.
And the other circumstance would appear to be an anomaly, but it's not like it was a delay in orders. We don't have any additional information as to whether this was a delay or just a one-time reduction. It just seemed like an odd anomaly. So I don't think you should take from this that the fourth quarter is an automatic rebound.
Okay. Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
And thank you. Our next question. Oh, please go ahead, sir.
I'd just like to jump back in and follow up on Deepak's question on the cash flow during the quarter. Deepak, the quarter we were up $1.9 million in total cash, as you know. Of that, $2.2 million came from continuing operations with actually a cash outflow of $300,000 from the discontinued power operations.
Good. Okay, operator, your next question?
Yes, sir. Our next question comes from Joel Packer. Please go ahead, Joel.
Hello. Good morning, John. Yes, I've been on lots of your phone calls now, and what's lacking this one in particular is your lack of enthusiasm and excitement about the new products that were supposed to come out in the first quarter. And I must say it's disappointing, and it must be difficult for you and your team. Can you give us some color on what caused the delay in the new products, and who are the customers for these new and exciting products?
Well, good morning, Joel, and I think if you're hearing a lack of enthusiasm, it's probably because it's 6 a.m. for us here, but so it's probably more
always
reflective.
Always been 6 a.m., John.
Huh?
It's always been 6 a.m. These conference calls have always been at the same time.
Well, if you are hearing a lack, and maybe that's what it is, I don't know, Joel, but if you're hearing a lack of enthusiasm, I will tell you that that belies our actual feelings, where we are. I don't think I've ever been more enthusiastic about this company, its products, its people, and our prospects. So let me set the record straight there. I think our prospects are great. I'm really excited to be narrowing our focus on our continuing operations. I think we spent the day yesterday in a strategy session with our board, and we are very, I think we've got a great strategy, as I said in my opening comments. Super people, great product platforms. I think that we're going to do very well as we move forward. So, and just to really put a fine point on it, I've never felt better about this company, its people, or its products. So, just so that we're clear, you spoke about delays. I'm sorry?
Can you talk a little bit more about the products, the new products?
Sure. We have been working for some time, and that development work is ongoing for a new generation of outdoor lighting products. The heart of that is an energy management system that will have some very unique features in that we're not prepared yet to speak publicly about those features. It is largely on track from a scheduling standpoint. We will have it active at the beginning of 2017, and as I said a minute ago, we'll be beginning to quote it and ship by the end of Q1. And
we'll be showing the first prototype
in Q1.
Where?
At
a solar conference, how are you going to introduce the product?
We haven't got plans that we're prepared to disclose at this point in time, Joel.
But we should expect to see it in January or February?
Yes, that's correct.
A prototype?
We'll have working models. We'll have production models by the end of the first quarter.
Certainly, you'll have a prototype first.
Oh, we already have prototypes.
Okay, so we're not going to see what these things are until February or March.
Well, like I said, we're going to start quoting them at the beginning of the year, and we expect to ship at the beginning of the second quarter.
Where are they going to be manufactured?
In the United States.
From previous manufacturers, from your usual suppliers or new suppliers?
Not prepared to talk about that, Joel.
All right. When are you coming to New York to introduce yourself to some shareholders here?
I have no plans.
What, you have no plans?
No.
I guess I've been an investor for a number of years now, and I've put some friends into the company, and I must tell you, they're losing their patience. So you ought to be open to that kind of shareholder feedback.
Well, I am open to it, and I'm sorry to hear that, but we have been pretty clear that we are attempting to build value over the long term. We've been pretty open in terms of all that we're doing and how we're doing it, and I'm quite satisfied with what we're doing and how we're doing it.
And there was no mention on this conference call about any acquisitions.
No, we continue to have a number of acquisition discussions moving ahead, but I make no excuses for the fact that until we can do deals that are sensible, we simply won't. We expect to have the capital to be able to fund significant acquisition activity going forward, and we feel and understand that we need to put that capital to work, but that's balanced off against our need to find good transactions with good people and businesses that fit into our strategic future.
All right, thank you. So, I'm sorry you won't be in New York to visit some shareholders.
Well, it's not to say that I won't be, Joel. I just don't have any current plans. All right, thank you.
And Mr. Simmons, there are no further questions. Please continue.
Okay, well, thanks everyone for attending. I think we'll leave it at that there. As always, if there are further questions, you can contact us directly. We always welcome your questions and comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the conference call for today. If you have any further questions, please call our Carmenas Investor Relations toll-free number at 1-877-722-8877. Thank you for participating. Please disconnect.